To Dr. Andreas Topadakis on this beautiful Saturday afternoon. As you know, Dr. Topadakis resigned from his duty as nuclear research scientist at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories at the beginning of this year. He's going to be talking about corporate secrets, scientists, and responsibility that scientists have in the research that they're doing. He's going to tell us about why he resigned from his duty, as well as many other corporate secrets that we're not meant to know about. So please welcome Dr. Andreas Topadakis.
Hi to everyone. Thank you for coming this Saturday. Took the time to come. I'm very pleased to be at MIT today to speak to some students and to some faculty members. I believe that students and faculty in this educational place are of special group of people. And everybody knows people that they come to this place, they are very intelligent. There are people that they love challenges. They love the challenge. And on the basis of this, I would like, before I leave from this room today, to also give you a challenge. I will challenge you. And the reason I felt very strongly to come to places like this with scientists is because as a colleague, as a scientist, as a peer, I want to tell you what I have been through, what I have seen, what I've heard, and in that way, you will be as powerful as you are in your mind, a cornerstone for uplifting humanity instead of destroying humanity. So I would like to take some time to present to you a few parts from my open letter. In fact, most of my open letter to the director of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, which has become kind of a classic document worldwide. People are extracting pieces from it. And I have met a lot of people since I resigned here in Japan and different other places. And there are many people that they want to know the truth. Of course, there are many people that are indifferent. But we should not look around. We should look in our heart and do the right thing. So this is the open letter to the director of Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And really, what in this letter is the reasons for my resignation from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. And this letter is also an appeal, first of all, to you. First of all, to my peers, to my colleagues, the scientists. That is the first audience that is really directed. But also it is directed to every secretary, technician, custodian, science technician, as I said, and any other person whose participation supports the World War Machine to withhold their skills from weapons work and from activities that support or enable weapons work. And I'd like to start with a quote by Einstein. He said that the unleashed power of the atom has changed everything except our thinking. Thus, we are drifting towards catastrophe behind conception. We shall require a substantially new manner of thinking if mankind is to survive. And so we have a moral obligation and duty to think, speak, and act first as citizens for a peaceful world and next as scientists. The higher our education is, the higher our responsibilities are for a humane world. Should we talk about science before we even think about what our science is for? That is precisely what most of us are doing. And that is why I resigned from my position as a scientist in the nuclear weapons program at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory as of January 31st of this year, 2000. Albert Einstein warned us about the unleashed power of the atom. This basic force of the universe cannot be fitted into the outmoded concept of narrow nationalisms. The Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory's logo is science in the national interest. I believe that even if Albert Einstein was alive today, not only he would not be working at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, but he would also be strongly condemning its mission. And what is the logo of Los Alamos National Laboratory? Science serving society. Do the national labs believe that they are serving society by endangering its very existence? My purpose in writing this letter is to make known the reason for my resignation from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. It is simply that my conscience does not allow me to work for the development or maintenance of nuclear weapons. In direct relation to this, I would also like to make known my concern about the hiring practices of the lab and to let you know about these practices before you join such places. When I was hired at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, I was not adequately informed about the specifics of my job responsibilities. After being hired, I found myself expected to work on weapons maintenance in the stockpile stewardship program. I believe that I am not alone in having this experience of not being directly informed. I find it quite curious that informed consent is common practice in our society, yet prospective employees at the U.S. nuclear weapons laboratories are not asked to provide written consent to their job responsibilities before being hired. This attitude of indirectness is demonstrated in U.S. Department of Energy Secretary Bill Richardson's own words on another topic during an interview with CNN on January 29th. Yes, there were exposures. The workers were not actively lied to, but they were not informed of potential exposures. So it's not a direct lie, but it could be that they were not leveled with. And in the New York Times, which reported the story first, he said, "This is the first time the government is acknowledging that people got cancer from radiation exposure in the plants. A preliminary study by the White House and DOE cited elevated rates of 22 categories of cancer among 600,000 workers at 14 nuclear weapons plants, including Livermore Lab. For 50 years, workers in the DOE nuclear weapons complex have suffered toxic and radioactive exposures resulting in illness and premature death. All these years, the government spent millions of dollars to fight claims by sick employees and their widows. The U.S. government's recent acknowledgement raises serious questions. If their workers had been informed of potential exposures, would they have joined the military complex to do nuclear weapons work? I'm asking DOE the same question. If many scientists knew that sooner or later they would find themselves entangled in nuclear weapons work, would they have joined the national labs? I believe that we are dealing with unethical practices in not leveling with people and that serious questions are raised regarding the integrity of our leaders. The outcome, as in every similar case, is that no one individual by name is accountable. And eventually it is the taxpayers of this country who pay for all these wrongdoings. Upon realizing, on the one hand, the obviously questionable practices in the workplace, and on the other hand, the real mission of the National Scientific Laboratories, I decided to withhold my skills and resign. I cannot forget what my ancient Greek teachers taught me, which I now see being practiced worldwide. Science without virtue is immoral science. Plato. The Washington Post on December 9, 1999, reported, "The Tennessee Valley Authority approved a plan today to produce nuclear weapons material in a commercial reactor for the first time in U.S. history, bridging a long-standing wall between civilian and military nuclear power. In other words, the electricity producers will now be producing nuclear weapons." The December 10, 1999, Washington Post reports, a blue ribbon scientific panel appointed by Congress to review the U.S. nuclear stockpile has recommended that the Department of Energy design a new billion-dollar plutonium weapons plan and organize teams at the nation's nuclear laboratories to design new warheads for the first time in more than a decade. But the Russian parliament still has not ratified START II, and the Russian government has warned that the U.S. rejection of the comprehensive testbed treaty, along with America's efforts to amend the landmark 1972 anti-ballistic missile treaty, could spark a new arms race. On the same day, they also reported that President Boris Yeltsin, visiting China to secure support for Russia's military campaign in Chechnya, launched a surprising verbal assault on President Clinton today, including a blunt reminder that Russia is a nuclear power. How can we continue to go back home after work every day and look in our children's eyes and tell them that we're working for a safer world for them? Have our hearts become stones? Every person alive today, if we go deep enough into the contradiction between one's conscience and one's outward life, is in a state of despair. We, the scientists, have tried to justify our involvement in building and maintaining nuclear arsenals by claiming that we are doing it for peace. How can we have peace when by our work on weapons we are raising fears in the hearts of those who do not have the same technology for killing? The latest news demonstrates how the situation has deteriorated in just a very short time. Reuters, 19 January of this year. English translation from Rosinkaya Gazeta, 18 of January this year, reports that acting Russian President Vladimir Putin signed into law a new national security strategy that lowers the threshold on first use of nuclear weapons. The national security concept of the Russian Federation allows the use of all existing forces, including nuclear weapons, to oppose any attack, nuclear or conventional, if other efforts fail to repel the aggressor, and allows the first use of nuclear arms in case of a threat to the existence of the Russian Federation. The new military guidance proclaims Russia's intention to oppose American domination of the international arena. The doctrine states the Russian Federation must have nuclear forces capable of delivering specified damage to any aggressor state or coalition of states in any situation. Not surprisingly, the new Russian military doctrine mirrors current U.S. nuclear weapons policy. As reaffirmed in a presidential decision directive signed by President Clinton in November 1997, our nuclear deterrent posture is one of the most visible and important examples of how U.S. military capabilities can be used effectively to deter aggression and coercion, as reaffirmed in what I said before. Nuclear weapons serve as a hedge against an uncertain future, a guarantee of our security commitments to allies, and a disincentive to those who would contemplate developing or otherwise acquiring their forces, their own nuclear weapons. And he said, the United States must continue to maintain a robust triad of strategic forces sufficient to deter any hostile foreign leadership with access to nuclear forces and to convince it that seeking a nuclear advantage would be futile. We must also ensure the continued viability of the infrastructure that support U.S. nuclear forces and weapons. The stockpile stewardship program will guarantee the safety and reliability of our nuclear weapons under the comprehensive 10-step treaty. And that was the program I was working on, the stockpile stewardship program, before I resigned. And this last statement that I said come from a national security strategy for a new century, the White House, October 1998, page 12. But we know that true peace is based on mutual trust, don't we? The argument that I have heard so many times from weapons scientists is this: since the last big war, we have not heard another one. So the invention of terrible weapons of destruction has put an end to war because, they say, everyone knows how terrible it would be if they dared to start one. This is an error. Who has led them to this amazing delusion? Who has led them to lose themselves in the temporary daily demands of their scientific careers and to forget about eternal demands of their conscience? My fellow scientists and engineers, the national labs must change from labs of wars to labs of peace if there is a chance to avoid the extinction of all life on Earth. Environmental work is not the same as work on weapons. And environmental work is not environmental work when it creates space for more weapons. Does non-proliferation work advance the goal of non-proliferation when at the same time we're building more weapons? Who are we trying to fool? Many scientists are hired at the national labs to do environmental or other work, seemingly not directly related to weapons work. But because of budgetary considerations, these scientists, sooner or later, find themselves being expected to work on the making or maintenance of nuclear weapons. I propose, therefore, the use of an informed consent document during these hires so such unwelcome surprises can be avoided. Those who work on environmental projects or non-proliferation projects at the nuclear weapons labs have not realized that such a thing is an illusion. What environmental work? What non-proliferation work? Last October 13, the U.S. Senate voted down the 4 years in the making comprehensive test ban treaty. Now, through the deceptively named stockpile stewardship program, not only are weapons expected to be tested, but new weapons are also to be made. In simple words, we are burying the waste so we can make more. We are building more weapons so the other nations will follow our example. It is apparent that DOE is also luring civilian establishment to participate in the development of a new generation nuclear arsenal and is seeking to incorporate the nation's leading universities into an effort to attract and train yet another generation of nuclear weapons designers. But I consider the most inexcusable DOE practice to be the luring of high school students into the world of weapons. Innocent and naive young people are invited every summer into the National Nuclear Weapons Laboratories. They are taught the myth of keeping the world safe by building and maintaining thousands of constantly improved nuclear warheads. But their teachers fail to tell them that the fate of these weapons will ultimately be determined by the mood of a future dictator, and that it will be too late then for anyone to stop the great violence to be committed against humanity. It seems that the world has already forgotten the Cuban Missile Crisis. The survival of humanity hangs on the decision of one man, Nikita Khrushchev. Would he or would he not yield to the U.S. ultimatum? Prudently, several years ago, Henry Beinin, a political scientist and president of the Northwestern University, pointed out that even national leaders can make very bad miscalculations. Today's high school students are not told that nuclear weapons are designed to slaughter men, women, and children by thousands, by millions. How much do they know about why these weapons are made and how and where they may be used? Undoubtedly, no young man or woman would agree to work on nuclear weapons if he or she had been on the ground in just one of the many wars that the United States or Russia or any other country has unleashed on so many poor people in the name of humanitarianism. If they had seen their mother being splintered to pieces, they would not only refuse to be associated in any way with weapons of mass destruction, they would also protest the existence of such establishment as the weapons labs. Recently, a new treaty was signed banning children's under 18 in combat. After 6 years of negotiations, government agreed on January 22nd in Geneva to establish 18 as the minimum age for soldier participation in armed conflicts. Are we going to continue luring our minor children into nuclear weapons laboratories? We must stop this practice immediately. Are we going to continue recruiting our youngsters into the military even before they graduate from high school? Wouldn't it be better for every one of us to recruit them to become soldiers for peace instead of war? Should you then be surprised that in our world there is no peace but violence? Recently, the December 17, 1999 issue of Newsline, it's a newspaper in Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, we read the headline, "Teachers Learn Lessons in Nuclear Materials Research." What is wrong with that? Let's read on. A group of 13 teachers from six states are in Monterey, which is a beautiful place, as you know. Pretty nice place to have a meeting. Today, as a critical issues forum, learning how to conduct research with their students on issues related to the disposition of nuclear materials, suggested activities included researching the basics of radiation, the nuclear fuel cycle, and weapons production, maintenance, storage, and disposal. As the article says, the objective of the forum is to help teachers motivate the next generation of scientists, policy analysts, and military officers required to manage what? The U.S. nuclear infrastructure. We cannot ignore these facts and go on with our science. Science, which ought always to be aiming at the good of humanity, is assisting in the work of destruction and is constantly inventing new means of killing the greatest number of people in the shortest amount of time. That this 20th century proved to be a century of inhuman slaughter. In the 1914 war, 15% of the casualties were civilian. In 1939, 50%. In 1950, 75%. In the 1990s, 90% of war casualties were civilian. Science that is used to terrorize people, kill them, or make them invalids is immoral science. It must be abolished immediately. Those who participate in acts of violence against humanity by using, making, or servicing weapons in the name of human rights or under any other name in every nation of the world must remove themselves from their jobs today. Surely, any one of us seeing one of our children killed or mutilated as a result of collateral bomb damage, as the pictures from every war show, would immediately resign from our job and condemn every act of violence. If we do not act today, we may very well see our own children become victims in ways we have never dreamed and never expected. No matter how much we try to justify keeping a job which promotes violence, deep down we know that we must find a different job. We know there are thousands of jobs around us that do not necessitate making excuses to keep them. We spend the majority of our lives tirelessly working to ensure our own personal security, while at the same time we are blindly putting it at risk by our own thoughtless actions. The contradiction between what we love to do and what we are forced to do by our fears has brought us into a state of despair. When we make our work the centerpiece of our existence, then we will find happiness. Einstein wrote, "Heroism on command, senseless violence, and all the loathsome nonsense that goes by the name of patriotism. How passionately I hate them." Now we have substituted the words national security for patriotism in order to fool ourselves. This is straight talk to every citizen of every nation that is involved with legal violence. Employees, like soldiers, are commanded to kill people whom they do not know. They kill and are killed, and like soldiers are commanded to kill people whom they do not know. I repeat it again. This letter is an appeal to every secretary, technician, custodian, scientist, engineer, and any other person whose participation supports the world machine. It is a wake-up call before tomorrow comes. Albert Einstein said again, "I know not with what weapons World War III will be fought, but World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones." If there is any hope for the survival of humanity, it is cooperative survival. It is not competitive survival. A military-oriented world economy must change soon to people's needs-oriented